This is the Out of Time Film Podcast, where your hosts, Tom and John, discuss everything from blockbuster films to TV and games like there's no tomorrow.
Hello and welcome to the Out of Time Film Podcast. I'm Tom.
I'm John.
And this week we are talking about Joker.
Wow, this film is like surrounded with so many controversies at this time. It was a movie you had to watch and understand what was going on with the media and around the world. So for context, Joker started off with so many people saying, oh, this movie is going to spark outrage for people. And we were like, oh, is this film going to be such a different experience we're going to have at the cinema? But no, it's a character we've seen, but this one, it's more of like a different format of like the world and how we're going to impact other people as well. So Joker, yeah. What do you think?
Yeah, it's an interesting time because 2019, arguably, it is the peak of the comic book movie medium. This is the year of Endgame, the year of Captain Marvel, the year of Joker. We're just coming off Infinity War and Spider-Verse and Black Panther and Aquaman in 2018, all massive successes. And it's really interesting because this one, we were getting so many comic book movies, much more than we'd ever had before. And this one was completely wildly something different. I mean, early on, this was described as the Scorsese Joker film because he was producing it. And so there's a lot of expectations on this. And it was really popular. I mean, until this year, Deadpool and Wolverine, it was the highest grossing R-rated film of all time. You know, it grossed over $1 billion. It was massively, massively popular. After I watched it again last night, I haven't seen it since the cinema. I went back and I looked at my old review where I gave it a 10 out of 10 and I said that it was a masterpiece. And that's certainly interesting to look back and be like, oh, okay, I really, really loved this film. What was your experience with it at the time? And has that changed for you?
Well, I just keep getting flashbacks to like at the cinema as well as like, you know, remembering, because the film, it is disturbing. The film is really disturbing to watch. But if you remember, people were watching it in a packed cinema, right? And you hear like laughs and you weren't sure where to laugh at in the story. It is not a funny movie at all, but it's like people went laugh at certain things in the story, and it's like, okay, why did they laugh? It just felt a really strange movie experience. But I did understand the message, you know, what I was trying to say about like you need to be nicer to people or that's gonna have an impact. It's like a cautionary tale, really, like be nicer to people. If we ignore the ones that genuinely need help, then that's going to cause some panic or outrage. But yeah, the film, it is a good movie with the cinematography, but I feel like with the movie, I don't know. I just need to talk a bit more. I need to yak about it and get it out in my brain.
Yeah, it's one that as soon as I finished it, I was like, God, how do we talk about this? There's so much to say and so much of it's complicated and tricky. And
yes,
I feel like a lot that you're
going to
hear from...
as well. It's complicated. Yeah. Yeah. It's
yeah. A lot that you're going to hear from us in this episode is going to be us working through in real time our own thoughts. And I mean, you're right. The film looks incredible. All the colors and camera angles and locations, they're so beautifully thought out and lit and put together. I mean, Gotham, it feels like a city on the edge of collapse, like it's going to eat itself because of this class war. And I do love it when we see Gotham in that way. It's done really effectively here. And you immediately believe that figures like Batman and Joker could be born out of a place like this. But at the same time, this feels so removed from every other, even Christopher Nolan's Dark Knight, which is very, very grounded in reality and really doesn't concern itself with some of the more comic book elements. Even that doesn't feel as grounded as this. This doesn't feel like a comic book city at all. On the one hand, yeah, I do believe that Batman could rise from this city, but that's about it. I can imagine Joker, I can imagine Batman. I can't imagine Mr. Freeze or Two-Face or Poison Ivy or the Riddler or...
Yeah.
This feels so detached from everything. And I know a lot of people dislike this film because it is so very different. It's not at all like the comics. It's not at all like any iteration of the Joker we've ever seen. And I don't really mind that. I don't mind doing something a little bit different, but it's really trying to do something different with the comic book movie genre. There are no action sequences in this film, which is basically a first. I mean, it's obviously taking a lot of cues from Scorsese films. It wants to be something much more like art house than what many comic book movies are. But the problem is, for me, you also have moments where the film really talks down to its audience.
Yes.
Like,
yes.
I guess, you know, straight into spoilers here, but when we get the reveal that Arthur had been imagining his relationship with the woman across the hall, the film cuts to numerous scenes with the two, and then she disappears and he was imagining her the whole time. She was never really there. And I don't think audiences are that stupid.
Yeah.
To me, that's really condescending. I think you could absolutely figure that out from the dialogue in the scene, you know, and I think the film would have really benefited from going further into the level of, you know, confusion and truth and never confirming or denying what's real and what's not. That's very King of Comedy. That's a comparison that's been made many times. And I'm never a fan of when films talk down to their audiences and they don't let things be subtle or nuanced. And when a film like this is so obviously trying to be something more than what is expected of it, it made me roll my eyes because it's not a proper comic book adaptation, but also doesn't really want to be its own part of this art house medium. And so it kind of sits in the middle and it's just kind of like, it's there.
Yeah, and another example of this movie trying to talk down to the audience was that very first scene with Arthur talking to the therapist, and straight in, the therapist doesn't really care, but it's just talking down to the audience like, oh, this is where the movie's going. He's not going to get any help because the therapist doesn't really care. Again, when it comes to that grounded reality of Gotham, I know what it's trying to say, but it's just like it's completely dumbing down towards the audience. And I agree, it's just really frustrating and you just want to have it be subtle, you know, you don't want to have anything too dramatic or that's going to be like, oh, we knew, but you know, it's all about having to guide the audience rather than just tell them and just like, oh yeah, this happened. It's like, oh, okay, sure.
Yeah, it feels like somebody who's watched a couple of movies and gone, yeah, I get what you need to do to make an art house film, but also wants to make a comic book movie. And, you know, that could be a whole host of things. That could be the studio wanting to make it more obvious. That could be the director genuinely believing that that's what they want to go for. But it's stuck in this weird limbo where, like, what is it? And in different hands, that could be terrible. I don't think it's a massive issue. It's definitely an issue that stops this film from being as good as it could be. But I do think the direction is really good. And, you know, considering that Todd Phillips before this, his most popular work was The Hangover, totally different tone, totally different genre. He really does a good job of this. And there's so many moments where I, you know, there's numerous dance sequences and, you know, various camera movements that I'm like, yeah, no, that's some good stuff. It's not reinventing the wheel. It's nothing that I haven't seen before, but it is interesting. And when you consider it as this genre, if you consider me watching it 5 years ago, when I hadn't really watched many of these films, it is something different and it is something new and exciting. And it all kind of moves around Joaquin Phoenix, whose performance is just amazing. It's electric. Without him in this utterly magnetic role, the entire film basically falls apart. You know, his best actor Oscar, I think, was well-deserved. And everything he brings to the character is wonderful. Without him, the whole thing falls apart.
Yeah, Joaquin Phoenix is incredible in this role. When I watched it on the big screen, I was like, wow, that is definitely an actor that is pouring his heart out into this role. And you can definitely tell that he wanted to really go into that, and he deserved that Oscar win. It was just fantastic to see that kind of actor, because that was the only actor that came to my mind, you know, thinking about like the 2019 performances on film. That one was just completely vivid in my mind after I watched the film. That was such a highlight for me to watch it again. I was like, that was why I liked it, because of the performances from Joaquin. It was great.
Yeah, you feel a level of sympathy for him at times, but also I don't think you like him. I don't think that you carry sympathy for him throughout. I do think that you can understand where he's coming from with a lot of the crimes that he ends up committing, but throughout, he's not this utterly tragic character. There is like a darkness with him from the start, even with him stalking the woman across the hall. At that point, there was nothing really to provoke him from just being a bit of a weirdo. And I think everything, even the physicality of the role, I don't really think actors need to be losing so much weight for roles like this. You know, it can be quite dangerous. But yeah, exactly, Christian Bale. But there is no denying that the physicality he brings to it is pretty freaky, and everything from his hair and his laugh, like the two different laughs, almost his real laugh and then like his kind of forced laugh with this condition that he seemingly has. It's very, very interesting to unpack this character. And if Joaquin Phoenix wasn't so good at what he does, you know, he utterly transforms by the end when he becomes the Joker, at least this form of the Joker. I mean, I'm curious How does he rank in terms of all the other live action Jokers for you? Like, you know, who's your favorite? Do you think he does the role justice? Like, what are your thoughts?
Okay, that's... I need to look back at the Jokers.
We've got Jared Leto. We've got Heath Ledger. We've got Jack Nicholson. We've got Cesar Romero. And of course, my goat, my favorite, Cameron Monaghan from Gotham, in which he plays three different Jokers, essentially. And he's amazing.
It was a fantastic scene with him, with like Russian roulette there.
Yes.
And it was fantastic. Yeah. That was fantastic to watch from Cameron. Yeah, looking back, I think it is Cameron, my favorite as well. I really loved his performance in Gotham and just really brought it out in many different ways. It was fantastic, definitely straight out of Son of Stuff with Joker's face as well from Death of the Family. And when it comes to Joker, it's about the mystery side of it, and you want to keep that going as well. There's like the mystery elements, what make Joker as a character. And this is interesting because with Joker, you don't have Batman in the story, which is so interesting because it's like Batman and Joker are very much like archetype for having the protagonist antagonist, like this yin and yang. And I think that's so fascinating to have because you definitely get to see that throughout all the comic book things, like in Lego Batman as well. As like, yes. I can't be without you. Oh, and there's that beautiful thing with Kim Conroy's and Mark Hamill's like voice acting as well. You do get to see that in the animated series. But this one in here, no Batman. And it's like, okay, how do you create a story around Joker that doesn't surround the Caped Crusader or a vigilante or doing all of that? I can give the film props to, you know, what it was trying to do without Batman, because it's very hard, because it's like those two are the reasons why we love the world of Gotham, and it shows the best and the worst of it. It was very interesting to see that. How did he do it without Batman?
Yeah, it's interesting because, again, like, it's kind of detaching itself from numerous elements of the comic book lore, but it brings in stuff like Thomas Wayne. I thought it was really interesting to see Thomas Wayne as something other than the perfect father and savior of Gotham. That's what we see in many adaptations of Batman.
Yes.
But here he's out of touch, he's arrogant, he has the right intentions, but, you know, he's massively ignorant to the struggles of Gotham's working class. You know, it's impoverished. And Bruce always saw his dad as the, you know, great man who wanted to change the world and who saw the good in everyone. But it's really compelling to see a different perspective, one where you can see the anger and frustration at the constant neglect from the impoverished parts of Gotham that leads to the Wayne's murder. I know a lot of people at the time when we saw the Wayne murder at the end of Joker, they were like, oh, we have to see the Wayne murder again. But I think it really works. I think every time we see the Wayne murder, it gives us something, it tells us something. It's too important to lose that element of the Batman mythos, even though this one doesn't directly deal with that. You know, the two characters are incredibly important to each other. And it's really fitting that we're talking about the different Jokers as well, because this episode is releasing on the 10-year anniversary of Gotham. And that is one of my favorite shows of all time. I think that, yeah, across 5 seasons, it goes from strength to strength, and it has some of the best iterations of Batman's rogues gallery, or just Batman characters in general, like Cameron Monaghan as Jerome and Jeremiah. Just happy 10-year anniversary, Gotham. You are, what a Yay. Show, what a show. But yeah, I think every single Joker, they present something different. Jack Nicholson, he is very much the clown. Heath Ledger is very much the anarchist. Jared Leto is very horny. And Joaquin Phoenix brings something different as well. You do get that origin story for him, but it does keep you guessing with a sense of, like, he himself doesn't know what's real and what's not. And he's more like the martyr. That's kind of what his role as the Joker is. Like the scene at the end where he's dancing on the crashed cop car and he's kind of inspiring all these riots. You know, he is a figurehead. He's more than just a man. He's incited some real movements from real people, and that's equally terrifying.
Yeah, it reflects Arthur as a character, and then see him as become the Joker is like that terrifying reality when it comes to that. And again, it's with Joaquin's performances as well. He cares about his mother, he wants to make people laugh, and when he goes into the world, he falls into where he got attacked around the beginning of the movie. That was the catalyst for him to completely fall down into this rabbit hole, which is a good way to go into that as well with him, and, you know, with his mental health. But yeah, it's interesting when characters are mentioned like that as well. And then people are worried, like, for example, the media that like, were worried that the film was going to cause a lot of backlash or some of that. When the film was showed at Venice, Time magazine was worried that this film was going to be for incels.
Yeah.
People were worried that we're going to use this film as a means to fight back or some of that. It goes into that world of like people misreading the film. So you got people who misread Fight Club. You know, they look into Fight Club and they think, oh, yes, that's what it means. No, it doesn't. It's talking about toxic masculinity. And the film kind of goes into that as well with toxic masculinity and like, how do we become ourselves? That's what Arthur is trying to be. You know, he's trying to figure out himself, but it goes into this rabbit hole. And again, this is what the movie does. It keeps telling us again and again, there's people in power that are trying to impoverish people. That's a good message. It keeps telling us and it keeps talking us down as an audience. I'm like, okay, we get it.
Yeah, I can see why something like Time magazine would worry about that. I mean, do you remember the whole clown mask thing in
yes.
the, it was before this film, it was like 2016 or something, and like all like through like Halloween, it might have been,
yes,
you know, it was definitely yes. in the UK, but it might have been wider than that and people were dressing
yes,
in it was
clowns.
You know, pretty
yeah, yeah.
freaky. And I definitely think that this film, perhaps it revels too much in the anarchy and devastation. There is a reason why so many people refer to it as basically, as you say, the incel fantasy. It is a bleak film, and there isn't really many examples of good people or reasons to see good
yes.
in the world. And I think that's
yes.
very Joker, and in many ways that's perfect. But also, Joker is a villain. He's not an anti-hero. He's not a twisted savior. He's an anarchist. He's someone who does horrific crimes with no rhyme or reason. You know, as Alfred says in The Dark Knight, just wants to see the world burn. And,
yeah.
you know, I accept and I embrace this as a different interpretation. I really do. I just think the film itself is seesawing between condemning Joker's actions and condoning them. I do think this Joker is pretty terrifying, you know, with Phoenix's performance, his whole look, but mostly because this is someone you can really believe would be born in our society, someone who could be real and could be created under the right circumstances.
Yeah.
And that's not something you get from most adaptations of the character. And when you add that to the fact that the film mostly depicts him as a hero, you know, with all these dastardly acts and his mental health issues, we all have a really mixed pile of whether these things work. And I'm not sure they always do.
Yeah. When films have a villain or a horrible character that we follow, like American Psycho, when it comes to like Joker, we are mixed about that because in the comics, we identify him as a villain. We do understand him as a character, but it's kind of hard to do that with sympathy. And it's harder for us to try to get into this grounded reality and try to, I don't know, it just feels very weird when you think about Joker as a character. Like, okay, I know him as a villain, but then the film trying to make him as a hero. It's a weird relationship when you're watching it as a film. You're just like, oh, okay. I don't know how to feel about this.
Yeah, I think it's obviously it is really well done and really well put together. I just think that there are some elements of it where I'm like, oh, is this, what are you saying here? Do you even know what you're saying here? And that's the kind of thing that I think is a little bit tricky.
It goes into
times.
Different concepts as well in the movie. It does do that.
There's a lot going on for sure.
Yeah, but I do love the score. That's what the other thing
yes.
as well, the scores as well. Who was it made by?
Hilda Gudnadottir, who I really
yes.
hope I'm saying the name right there, but like, my God, what a score. Her work on this film, best original score at the Oscars, which is one of few times that a female composer has ever won. And it's no wonder, because this score is oppressive and grating, but there's also this sinister edge that builds beneath the surface. And also, you know, that it is tragic. It fits excellently and is one of the best original scores that I've seen in a comic book movie, but it's also so different. It's perfect.
Yeah, it's just like this world that you listen to, and it just creates this feeling that you're just like, oh, wow, okay, that's oppressive feeling, as you said. And the other thing when it comes to like thinking about art, for example, like to comfort, but also art is to discomfort the audience as well. It's like trying to make us go through the emotions because we're just guided by that. So Joker is a film that does comfort the audience. It does try to make it feel like an art house. That's what it is. It's trying to replicate art in a very weird way. I know this is a comic book movie character. I know what the movie's trying to do, but it's just like, you could have done it in a different way if you think about the Joker. And it's harder for the audience as well, because I know Joker. I know what he's trying to do. And it's when it comes like connections. It's like, I know what it is. I'm trying to make connections in the movie. That's what I was trying to
yeah.
do in a movie theater. It's like, oh yeah, that's the Waynes. I know what they're talking about. It's that. Yeah, it's hard.
I feel like it would take me quite a few more times to watch this film and to truly understand what I feel about it and what quite doesn't work. Because I know what works, like that's easy, but the stuff that I'm not quite sure about, there's a lot to think about. And, you know, I do applaud it for giving me a lot to think about. It's interesting because at the same time, I will never watch this film again. They're making a sequel. They've said they're not going to make another one. I don't really, you know, and part of that's because, you know, I'm getting older. I don't rewatch films a lot. And a lot of films that have come out over the past few years that are franchises or spin-offs, they don't give me any real reason to go back to it. And this one is like, there's a lot to like. There's stuff that I don't like as well. But I don't really think I care enough about any of it to come back.
Yeah.
But thinking about that, how are you feeling about the sequel currently? Like, what's your standing?
Okay,
going into
so
that?
Now my thoughts as a sequel, I'm just like, where on earth are you going to go with this? Because the ending really wrapped everything up. And then I had this dawning, you know, thought in my head. I was like, oh God, there is going to be a sequel. And it just kind of takes away the things in the movie. When sequels try to do something, a do-over on the character, or like TV shows, they try to reestablish the character and why everybody hates that character or why we like that character. That's the thing when it comes to sequels. It's like, oh, I know why we don't like that character. We like this character. So I'm just worried that movie is going to do that again and tell us the same character. And what I've heard from the reviews at this time of the recording, the reviews, they ain't that good. I look like a crazed maniac right now. I'm just like,
you really do.
I don't like that.
The reviews.
Yeah, and I just feel weird about it. I'm just like, okay.
When I found out that Joker 2 was going to be a musical, I was a very happy boy. I was like, this is brilliant. Let's take it in a different direction. Let's not just be a dead horse. Let's do something wild and unexpected. And if the reviews are to be believed, it's not enough of a musical to make musical fans happy, but it's too much of a musical to make fans of the original film happy. And as somebody who wanted a nice balance between the two, it seems like maybe that's not going to be the case. Maybe they're not going to go into each one enough. And so it's a bit like, we'll see. That's in 2 weeks' time. What are you going to give Joker out of 10?
That's a very good question, because I do have like really mixed feelings about this film.
Yeah, me too.
Maybe a 6 or 7. I feel like that.
Yeah, I sit on that as well. I think purely because of stuff like the score and because of how it looks, I would give it a 7. I'd say a low 7, to be honest. But yeah, I think you're right. 6 or 7 are in there. Thank you everybody for listening. If you're listening on YouTube and you enjoyed it, you can like and subscribe if you want to see more. And if you're listening on Spotify or Apple, you can follow and give us a 5-star review if you think we're worthy. And next week, I don't know. We're either going to be doing Megalopolis or Hellboy. Maybe comment it below. Tell us what you want to see. Or we'll just choose, because we're going to go see them both.
Where are the dates? You know, who knows? Yeah, it's crazy. They haven't given us the date.
They're both next week.
But yes, but Cineworld.
Yeah, it's true. We don't. They haven't.
We don't.
Yeah,
we don't.
Yeah, we don't know the film. We don't know the film. I get it. I'm here. I'm back. We're so back.
Yeah, you're back. Oh, he's back, guys. He's back to thinking. Woo! Oh yes. I think therefore I am. Yes, and you can follow us on Instagram at Out of Time Film Pod to see our incredible thumbnails from Zane Asbel, on Twitter for more thoughts from Tom and me, and TikTok to see edited clips, which are all also on Instagram Reels and YouTube Shorts. And you can find links to that all in the description below. Thanks to LGN's Mayor for the excellent theme, and Roland Phillips for vocals as always. And I think that's everything. Yeah, and that was Joker. Take what you're given.
Give nothing back.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.